afternoon. You are tuned in to Juno Afternoon News for Friday, the 8th of December, the year 2017. Jeff Brown filling in for Andy Klein, won't you hear just momentarily. Today in Juno Afternoon, we'll talk about the ORCA program with Tristan Knutson, Lombardo, and Sean O'Neill. We'll talk about the storytelling workshop with Tom Cosgrove. Alexander Pierce will talk about Project Playground, and Mercedes Munoz will be here to highlight what's happening at the campus. That Renault music and more today on Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures in the mid-40s. Forecast for Saturday, more rain with high temperatures in the mid-40s. Saturday night, more rain with low temperatures around 40 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo police were among law enforcement agencies to respond to a school shooting in New Mexico Thursday, with resources and personnel to assist Aztec, a community near the reservation. Two students and the shooting suspect were killed in the incident, which occurred during school hours at Aztec High School. Police are expected to provide further details on Friday. A Native American politician says she's running for governor of Idaho, Emily Schwing reports.
Paulette Jordan is 38 years old. She's a member of the Coeur d'Alene tribe, a state legislator, a graduate of the University of Washington, and she's been deeply involved in civic life.
It's a matter of giving back, and I look down at the heart of it all and felt that if I'm raised by Idaho and I know Idaho, I suffer with Idaho. Taking on the governorship would be the best way for me to impact people's lives.
Jordan joins a crowded race to succeed Idaho's current governor, Republican Butch Otter, who will not seek re-election after three terms. Among a dozen other declared candidates, only two are women, and there's only one other Democrat. If elected, Jordan would be the first Native American governor of a U.S. state. She'd also be the first woman elected governor of Idaho. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
Technology is playing a role in national health and wellness efforts, including in Indian country, as we see in our USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism series.
One.
A video on YouTube teaches powwow-style dance moves to encourage people to get active. People can use technology to find encouragement, track their workouts, meals, and other daily activities, all in an effort to boost overall health and achieve wellness goals. Waylon Pahona is a fitness trainer in Arizona. He travels around Indian country sharing his fitness story. In 2012, he created the Facebook group Healthy Active Natives.
It's hard to get people to come in and exercise. A lot of issues on the reservation with drugs, alcohol, pregnancy, you know, with youth, and then the grandparents taking care of the youth. How do I bridge that gap? Well, I basically just started sharing and talking about my life.
Waylon says there were some immediate challenges with the group, including pushback from some who consider it a stigma to share personal struggles. It was also time-consuming to administer the group, but he says over time members have stepped up and the group is now more sustainable. And it's not just online support groups. The United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization created an app with Native culture in mind.
And you can click the wellness tracker so that you can see.
Joshua So is the project coordinator for Unity's Wellness Warriors program.
When a lot of people hear the words wellness, they automatically think of physical fitness. A lot of times we'll forget about the other aspects of wellness, which would include social aspects, mental, spiritual, emotional. Every day, you don't feel great physically every day, but you also don't feel the same socially, mentally. So every day you're essentially a different person, and wellness is something that's an everyday approach.
The app was designed for Native youth. Users can track fitness activities like Native dance and healthy eating. There's also a section to upload photos and recipes for traditional foods.
The difference of how we approach wellness is that it's a balanced life, and that's where our traditional teachings come into play.
Lauren Ashley Buford is the Wellness Warriors project manager. She says the incorporation of indigenous values sets their app apart from others on the market.
This tool of the mobile app, it's just a way for them to communicate on a private level, but then feel supported that they're not alone in their efforts to try to better themselves.
The popularity and availability of health and fitness apps may provide opportunities for free or low-cost resources, but health experts and fitness coaches recommend people should consult their doctors for health care and a certified nutritionist for dietary advice. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, craft supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets. Holiday delivery on orders placed at drumbeatindianarts.com by December 15th. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Welcome back to a June afternoon. Andy Klein just running into the studio. Jeff, thanks so much for covering for me there. A little late there from work. And with me in the studio right now is Tristan Knutson-Lombardo and Sean O'Neill. Going to talk a little bit about the ORCA program. Tristan, I'll start off with you. What's going on?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Well, you know, it's I was going to say, it's you can tell by looking outside it's wintertime and maybe not actually.
Yeah, but maybe springtime. Weird. It's so bizarre out right now. Yeah.
But we're going to pretend like the snow is still coming, because it is. We know it is. Yeah, it's going to return. And we are excited about ski season here at SAIL and in our ORCA program. But I thought before we go into ski season, I might just give a brief little summary of SAIL and who we are and what we do.
Yeah, do that, because, you know, we associate the two programs together so much, but tell me a little bit about, yeah, all the work that SAIL does. And
yeah.
And ORCA is such a great winter program that happens.
It is. Yeah. And a lot of people recognize us, the ORCA program. But SAIL, we're Southeast Alaska Independent Living. We are an aging and disability resource center. We serve seniors and people with disabilities, all ages, all disabilities. We're a great place for people that if they have goals for independence and dignity, you know, we are the place to come and at least start that process for figuring that out. And a lot of people recognize our ORCA program, our recreation program, but we do a lot of other things as well in the community. A lot of people come down and borrow equipment from our loan closet, accessible technology, durable medical equipment. We have a taxi voucher program. We help people navigate long-term services and support. So if they're aging, or they have somebody with a disability, a family member, and they need to figure out how to get caregivers in the home and things like that, we help kind of navigate that system and apply, start the application process with Medicaid and all that kind of stuff. We do a lot of things. Bottom line, people come to us and they say, this is my disability. This is my goal for what independence looks like in my life, and we help figure out where we can kind of plug in and help make that happen.
Yeah, sometimes it's not that visible. Like ORCA seems like it's a real visible program. A lot of what SAIL does is in the home.
Absolutely.
Or it's helping people become independent. So, you see someone being independent and you don't realize that, well, that piece of equipment they're using, the way that they're getting up and down on ramps, things like that,
exactly.
All was facilitated by, could have possibly been facilitated by SAIL.
Absolutely. And we, you know, people will call us and say, hey, I'm getting older. I don't want to go to a nursing home or assisted living home. I want to stay in my home. What do I need to do to make my home safe, accessible, a place where I can age in place when we come in? And we also, we value a lot of our partners and collaborators in the community. So we don't, there's a lot of things that we don't do, but we're a great place to start because we can say, you know, we don't do this, but here are the people who do those things, and here's how to access those programs.
Yeah.
And so we can kind of help people put together a whole plan in that regard.
And Sean, you're sitting here quietly listening, but tell me a little bit about how you're getting involved in this program.
So I work for the ORCA program.
Okay.
And right now we're shifting into ski season, so that's pretty exciting. It's my favorite time of the year. And we're looking for volunteers for our ski and snowboard program. So if you're a skier or a snowboarder and you're interested in helping out with the ORCA program, definitely either give us a call at 586-0104. Or also, our dates for our trainings are December 16th and 17th up at Eagle Crest. And if you find yourself thinking, I need a little more info, I'm going to be at COPA tomorrow from 9:30 to 10:30 in the morning. And I'll just be there to answer questions or and just help people learn more about the ORCA program and what we do up at Eagle Crest and throughout the year.
Yeah, that's great, because maybe someone even isn't involved in skiing or snowboarding, but they do want to help the program. It's great to kind of know. So give us an idea. We can talk a little bit about the stuff that happens up on the hill in a minute, but what's an idea of the stuff that happens throughout the year at ORCA?
Throughout the year? So we work with all types or all ages. In the summer, we do a lot of kayaking and biking and hiking. And we also have a Youth Employments in the Park program. So we're partnered with CBJ Parks and Rec. So ORCA helps out with that.
So it's a way of people just getting involved in the outdoors, like getting involved in that, kind of overcoming maybe some barriers they may have, physical barriers or other barriers they may have, to getting to the outdoors. ORCA's, you guys are experts in helping people with that.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun, and it's really rewarding. I started off as a volunteer, so it's something I just enjoyed. And
little known fact, all of the staff in our ORCA program started out as volunteers.
Oh, yeah.
And they end up, when a position opened up, we were like, oh, that person was a good volunteer. Want to come play outside for and get paid to do it?
That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool. So what's some of the special equipment that comes into play when designing the ORCA program for the winter sports?
So we have sit skis, which is either a bi-ski or a mono-ski. We also have different types of equipment just that help with balance, because that's one of the biggest factors in skiing or snowboarding is balance. Also, just being partnered with Eagle Crest, like we get to also throw ideas off of their instructors, and it's all kind of the same format. So the way they're teaching skiing is also how we're teaching skiing. So that's
pretty
fun. Are
there trends that have happened in, like, kind of recent years, either in equipment or in ways of approaching how to teach skiing or snowboarding?
It's starting to kind of more focus on how to teach, which is really, I think, was really important, because you can know all the technical aspects of skiing and snowboarding, but more importantly, you need to be a good people person and also a good teacher, so knowing the proper way to teach any individual, because everybody's different.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest shift.
Yeah. Are there other winter challenges that SAIL has to kind of deal with? This is obviously a really fun program and a great physical activity program, but then there's also helping people overcome challenges throughout the year, and I would think winter might be kind of a challenging time of year.
Absolutely. We know winter certainly can prevent challenges or create challenges. One of the August ones is snow and ice, and so people, whether it's trying to navigate a bus stop, for example, if you use a wheelchair or a walker, if mobility is an issue and the snow is bermed up, a lot of people falling is a concern in the winter and slipping and falling, and if you have balance issues. So we do work with people in trying to get, making sure, do people have ice cleats for their shoes or for their cane or their walker so that they can get around safely? Do they know the access to and from their house, how it's going to get plowed or taken care of if needed. I think people, you know, a lot of people that especially grow up here in Southeast Alaska, they want to live here. We have the fastest aging population in the state and almost pretty much the fastest in the country. And so we know that people want to live here, but the winter can provide or create extra challenges for
mm-hmm.
people. And,
yeah.
and that's one of our goals is to figure out not just on an individual level, but also as a community, how do we make this a place where people can age, can grow old, stay with their family, stay in the neighborhood that they enjoy being in.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, we all like living here
in
Juneau and in Southeast.
It's a great goal. So let's talk a little bit about the training that's happening. This is December 16th and 17th. What's going to be happening up on the hill?
Yep. So we'll start off with kind of with an indoor little session, and then we'll work our way outside. We try to stay outside as much as we can. And we kind of just go over what it looks like to be a volunteer for the ski program and kind of explain how your day-to-day goes. It's pretty fun. The ski program's one-on-one. And you can either be helping out with a lesson or you can be enjoying the slopes with someone who just wants someone to ski with. And that's our ski buddy program.
Cool.
And it's a great way to earn free lift tickets.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I see. Okay.
That's
good. Yeah. Just a little perk of the job. That's good. So, and then for folks who might be interested in getting involved as a participant in the program, how can people get signed up or how does that work?
The best way is to either call the ORCA program. Again, their number is 586-0104. You can also come by the office. We're located at the corner of Hospital Drive and Glacier Highway, 3225 Hospital Drive. We're on the third floor of the gray building. But please do, you know, the cool thing about the ski program is we can get pretty much literally anybody, no matter their age, no matter their disability, out on the snow. The oldest skier we have is 90.
Wow.
And the youngest last year was
three.
So there you go.
That's so cool. Really.
Sitting or standing, we'll get you out there. So.
Well, awesome. Well, Tristan Knudsen-Lombardo and Sean O'Neill from the ORCA and SAIL programs, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it. And have a great time out there in the snow. We'll get snow.
Oh, we
will. We'll get snow, man. It'll happen.
We will.
All right. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon, joined by storytellers here who are going to be talking to me about Sunday's Storytelling Workshop. Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove are here. Tom and Pat, thanks so much for coming in and
thank you.
And sharing your knowledge about storytelling with folks. What's going to be happening here
on this
workshop?
What's going to be happening? We're calling it the
workshop.
Story Factory.
Okay.
Yeah, you show up with a germ of idea and we'll help you turn it into a story.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that we all have stories. We all have stories that are important to us. And people like to tell them, but they're not always, they don't really know how to accomplish that. Even though being a storyteller is a part of everyone,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes we forget. You know, people put in too much detail in the story. It's like, and this, and
right,
this.
Right, right, right.
No, what's the element? Strip out some of the detail. It's impressionism. It's not realism. And
so that idea of identifying themes, identifying how you could do a plot line, identifying how there could be a beginning, middle, and end, things like that.
Yeah, all stories sort of, have a beginning, middle,
right,
and end.
Right.
They got some action, and they got resolution.
Right.
These are all common pieces of a story, and it's just recognizing them and dialing into the important pieces.
Well, Pat, how do you do that with folks when they're coming in, they've got stories, but you know, I would think the death to a story is to apply a formula. Right, too much of a formula. So, right, I mean, there might be some of that. There might not. How do you?
Well, first of all, I hope that people come knowing that it's a safe place and that they can. The story, it doesn't have to have a happy ending. It doesn't have to be a happy story. It could indeed be a very comical story. It could be something very personal, and they need help getting it. Saying it in a way that, again, that it's a safe place and that they can they're willing and able to receive feedback and to ask for what they need. So I might need help with how I present the story. Maybe I got the story. I got the beginning, the middle, and the end. I have that narrative arc, but I don't know how to stand in front of a microphone and get it out to the audience. Mm-hmm. So there's lots that's involved. And so come with where you are, and we make an effort to get you over a hump maybe that you're stuck on.
And do you want people to come with one or two or some specific stories, or are people also could just come and they just want to in general learn?
I mean, they can in general learn, but coming with a story idea, I mean, you have to have something to apply the knowledge to. And so showing up with a story idea. And again, I believe we all have a story.
Mm-hmm.
Even you, Andy.
I don't know.
Story, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, what last night at supper, you know?
Yeah, exactly right.
What was that?
Right.
So the not-so-hidden agenda on all this is that this is a way for us to cultivate mudroom stories. You're not committing to doing mudrooms. If you're doing it, we are associated with mudrooms. But it's trying to get other people who may be interested in standing up, or if you just want to learn to tell that story better so that this Christmas you keep the grandkids' attention and you don't bore them and you want them to understand that this story is important to you and how to keep their attention. You know, it could be as simple as that.
That's a great way of thinking about it, too. You know, just applying some of those skills of keeping a story lively and interesting and to its theme and all those things to just as you're speaking about things in your life. You know, it doesn't have to be about I'm going to go do this performance. It could just be about I want to be able to convey this important thing to people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And part of passing on traditions, certainly, when we talk about the winter holidays that many of us are celebrating, and there are lots of traditions involved, and, you know, why is the end of the ham cut off?
right.
And there's a story behind that. And then go ask your grandmother, and she says, because your great-grandmother told me to. And you go ask great-grandma, and she said, because it didn't fit in the pan.
Right.
So, you know, there's reasons that things happen in a family, and those traditions are there, and those stories can be very entertaining and educational.
Yeah, I mean, I have certainly one of my grandfathers in particular, great storyteller. You know, I remember it still to this day, even though he passed away when I was very young. But you know, learning those skills, it seems like we probably used to be a much more oral relating society, right? And that's less and less. We're more and more in our little capsule.
And that is why this phenomenon of what mudrooms here in town, but second story, the moth, places all over the U.S., this idea of personal experience storytelling, it's become huge. And part of that is the whole later generation, millennials, that haven't had this experience like those that may have gray hairs do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're craving this because we grew up as beings that we learned from oral tradition. And if you didn't learn, you didn't survive. And so that whole idea of story and learning and sharing our experiences is a part of who we are.
It's a funny thing to think about how electronics have changed how we tell stories, right? You just said, oh, what did you talk about last night at supper? Well, for the most part, during that, I'll bet someone pulled out a thing and said, well, I don't know, when was that? Yeah. What happened? Yeah. What was that guy's name?
Exactly.
You know, it's changed the way that we have to creatively think I think that stories develop and change over time,
oh, absolutely.
Often from historical fact to something different. Mm-hmm. Now, it's you can always refer back to Wikipedia, so we always go back to the fact. I mean, I don't know how that...
stories do change over time. The story, if I have an experience, how I tell it as a teenager when I have it versus somebody who's 50 looking back on those things, same event. Totally different story.
Right, yeah.
Or, if I may, at the recent Thanksgiving table, somebody tells a story and the person across the table says, nah, that's not how it happened.
Right.
And meanwhile, the elder at the table says, I'll tell you what really happened.
Right.
And then there's a younger kid at the table who says, wait a minute, say that again, my mom did what? And you know, there's a variety of versions at that same dinner table. Yeah.
So tell me about how the workshop's going to kind of progress. What's it going to look like when you walk in?
First of all, it's Sunday, Northern Light United Church at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. It really is. There's no cost associated with it. There's going to be at least three storytellers there, Pat McClear, myself, and Pete Griffin, to assist people. We're looking at bringing people in. Whoever shows up, we're going to do a little quick and dirty song and dance, and then we're going to split up into groups, and we're going to individually work on stories. And so bring a story you want to tell or you want to talk about or however you want to do it. So we're just going to be working with people.
And when you say bring a story, what form would that take? Do people bring in their laptops? Do people bring in a notepad? Do they just have it in their head?
Whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most people have stories in their head.
Right.
So I'm saying come prepared from the point of view of saying, this is the story that I would like to work on.
Right, I have this thing.
Here it is, and maybe they only have it in their head, but share it with us, and let's start from there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, sounds like a lot of fun. Sunday's storytelling workshop. It's going to be...
The Story Factory.
Because we're producing.
Yes, all right. Something's going to come out of the other end.
You got it.
Right. And Tom Cosgrove, Pat McClear,
Pete Griffin.
And Pete Griffin. We know him so well from the Forest Service, and a great storyteller as well for many years. All going to be at the Northern Life Church. That's at Sunday at 3 p.m. to manufacture stories.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And help you with a story. So
and free of charge.
And free of charge. So head on over there to get your story fine-tuned by these story masters. Thanks so much, Pat and Tom, for coming in and letting us know all about it.
All right, thank you.
All right, coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. In many species of birds, the male is far more colorful than the female. For instance, this male northern cardinal is a stunning bright red, while his mate is more subdued. But the males and females of many bird species look identical. You need look no further than the nearest flock of crows. They are all the same color and size, and all pretty much a mystery as to sex. At least to our eyes, the same is true of many common birds, from song sparrows to blue jays to cedar waxwings. Just how such variety has evolved, even among closely related species, is a topic of great scientific complexity. And advancements in technology reveal that birds that look similar may actually be quite different genetically. But even if we can't tell who's who, the birds can. Some scientists think crows may be able to tell each other apart by slight variations in their calls. And it's probable that crows and many other birds see differences in each other's feathers in the ultraviolet spectrum. Feathers that to us just look black. There's still so much we have to learn about birds. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
The Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is holding a public open house about a traffic study for the Fred Meyer intersection at Egan Drive and Yandukin. It's on Tuesday, December 12th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. At 5:30 p.m., the project team will present traffic study data, explain preliminary intersection design concepts, answer questions, and listen to ideas and concerns. Meeting details are on the project website at alaska.gov/go alaska.gov/CWGK.
My name is Chad Edwards, a.k.a. Pucker Wilson, and I support public radio every darn day. I listen to KXLL in my car, I listen to KTOO at home, and I listen to KRNN on the weekends. My favorite show, Burger Church, because I love me some electronica and I love me some cheeseburgers. I listen to Fry's the Limit, Scott Fry's show. It's a lot more than objective news and great music. It gives people an outlet to express themselves and for us to come together. Public radio is an invaluable resource and they need our help. It's as simple as that. The bottom line is, in these crazy, wacky times that we live in right now, public radio sometimes is all we have. I would encourage anyone that lives in this community to give what you can. Give generously. Go online, kto.org. It feels like it's our radio station when you come down there and visit it.
Awesome to hear from Chad there, his support of public radio. And you can call right now at 586-3636. As they say, operators are standing by right now in this very low-key pledge drive that's happening. So do that and take care of the public broadcasting that comes to you year-round. With me now, Alexandra Pierce and Michael Goldstein are here with us to talk about Project Playground, the rebuild of Project Playground. And so, Alexandra, I'll start with you. Where are we in the process right now? Is the funding piece kind of done? The planning? Where are we in that sort of?
Well, we are in the design stage. We're redesigning a small portion of the playground, about 10%, for safety, accessibility, and a better play experience. And we are still working with our insurance company on funding. People may have heard that the Assembly recently appropriated $1.3 million for the rebuild of the playground. That was money coming directly from the insurance company that can't be spent on anything else. And then the steering committee, headed by Mike, is working on fundraising for improvements over and above what would be within the scope of the insurance replacement, which is really, their term is like, kind, and quality. So we don't need to build exactly the same playground down to the nail, but it needs to be a similar playground at a similar cost.
Mm-hmm, I see. And so, but with the original Project Playground was begun, what, 15, 20 years ago, somewhere in that range?
About 13 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there's been advances in materials and things like that. So is that some of the stuff that you guys are considering the steering committee, I would guess?
That's right.
Yeah.
Better surfacing material, for example. Different play equipment, components that are inclusive play experience, so folks that are mobility impaired and folks that are not can go and access the same play experience together and jointly. And then there's some just improvements in design that we've collected a series of bits of information from people and from a couple of public meetings and visiting schools and doing a lot of different outreach.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure when Project Playground burned, I'm sure I wasn't the only person that went online and started looking at, well, what are the other playgrounds like, and what are the best playgrounds in the world, and that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that's some of those ideas you're going to want to incorporate as much as possible, I would think.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've hired a design team to help us with that process. We have a local firm partnered with a playground design specialist, so we're happy to be working with them, and it's nice to be working with someone who has their finger on the pulse of what's going on in playgrounds right now, because, like you said, it's been 10 years since that playground was opened, and things have changed and progressed and advanced.
I guess one thing I think about, like, I was one of the volunteers that went and helped build the White Castle thing. I think that was part of the K2 when I was working here back that was made. So I guess people are going to want to know, what are some of the volunteer opportunities that might be coming up? What's the general timeline? Those kinds of things.
Do you want to take this one?
Mike, sure. I'll throw it at you, Mike.
Okay. We, you know, we just really have our designers on board, and we have a pretty rapid schedule. Our end in mind is hopefully August, and so we're working
to actually have a playground built or design done?
A playground built.
Wow. Okay.
The way we can work with the contractors with the insurance money, or with the designers with the insurance money, is to find contractors that are willing to build a portion of it. And so it won't be an entirely community-built experience. There will be some time, say up to a week, of people's volunteer time that they can come in and build like they did before, but none of the real larger superstructures and things of that nature. That would be contracted out.
And that's just a condition of when insurance is going to pay an insurance settlement, they want to make sure the work is going to be finished as promised, and so they want contractors to do that work.
The insurance company doesn't want to pay for volunteer labor, and not only do we want to maximize our reimbursement, but we also want to give a local business the opportunity to get a contract through the city to do the superstructure work on the playground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other volunteer opportunities will be coming up throughout the spring and early summer as we find out a way to round out either members of the volunteer group that's working with the steering committee or the steering committee itself for things like if we do have that portion of the volunteer build, we need medical professionals to be on site at that time, and we need to fundraise a little bit more and have food for people so there's a positive food and drink experience, you know, throughout that time. There's several other opportunities for people to get involved in. We do have that website, goprojectplayground.org, and so people can look on that, and we'll be populating that as the year closes and the new year begins.
And are there ways that you're collecting ideas from community members about what they'd like to see, about what sort of, those kinds of ideas?
Yeah, at the first initial public meetings that we held in early May, right after the playground burned down, we had some comment cards at the public meetings asking people what they liked about the playground and what they would like to change. We've had other public opportunities. People have certainly sent me emails as we've been moving through the process and being out in the public about this. We also went out to schools and got feedback from 15 classrooms about what the kids liked and what they would like to see, and that's kindergarten through eighth grade. So we've kind of compiled all of that into some broad themes and supplied that to our design team, and they have some very preliminary ideas of generally what components will be in the new and improved Project Playground, and that's what we're hoping to share with the community on Sunday and Monday at the public meetings.
Must be a really interesting project to work on, but also probably a little nerve-wracking. People are so invested in this playground, right? And everyone loved it, you know. So
that's
and
right.
They all love different components of it, and so it's a lot to take on, right? I mean, you're sort of you've got like a lot of the dreams and hopes of the community in a way in this playground because people put so much time and spent so much great, fun, wonderful times with their children and with their family there. A lot of memories wrapped up in that playground.
Yeah, having worked on Project Playground 1 for nearly 3 years before our build and spending a considerable amount of time taking off from work to do that build, and then seeing the anguish or the love and joy throughout the 10 years and then the anguish and the grief post-fire, it has been a really remarkable experience kind of conversing with someone walking down the street or someone who's heard some kind of public service announcement or news about the playground or wanting to know when they can get involved. Can I be a build captain? What can I do? It's a labor of love, and it's not easy. And I think collectively we've put a lot of analytical thought into where we can make the improvements, which is a very time-consuming process. And we hope that we can get as much as we can from the insurance funds, but we do know we need to keep fundraising, and we should within a month or so have a final target number. We've been working with the Juneau Community Foundation and with our partners at the Southeast Alaska Independent Living, SALE, on how we can do this and maximize the experience for our community. And with SALE also working on some of the inclusive play and design elements for mobility impaired. So it's been a really engaging and lovely process. Despite the amount of time it takes.
Yes, it's the proverbial phoenix, kind of rising out of the ashes. So if you could just explain to me one more time the funding. So there's this $1.3 million funds. Is that the entire settlement?
That is not the entire settlement. So there is $1.3 million that the insurance company has provided to the city to date. And so that money that the assembly appropriated just allowed us to put that into the city budget earmarked for Project Playground. We can be reimbursed for things of like kind and quality over and above that $1.3 million, and the insurance company's given us a kind of tentative ceiling. But at that point, it's about whether things actually fit into the playground design and a kind of similar structure.
So there's that parameter around a fairly strict replace of what burned down, right? And then there's additional ability to augment or put in additional services, that's where this additional funding may come into place.
And when we say replace, you know, we could say swap a slide for a swing of similar value.
Sure.
But we're not looking at completely redesigning and doing an entirely new playground. When we talk about the redesign, we're talking about 10% of the components within the playground.
So do you guys envision that with Project Playground in a year and a half, when it's all done and every nail and all the paint's all done, you'll look at it and you'll, if someone hadn't been here for 5 years, they'll go, oh, there's Project Playground? Or do you think it'll be pretty, well, how do you think it'll, maybe that's a hard question to answer. Obviously, you just got the design firm on board, but.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we do have some ideas of potentially, incorporating a little bit more space, incrementally small, but to just add a few flavorful ideas to the process. I think overall the superstructures will look fairly similar. But you know, one great big piece of feedback we heard over and over again were that lines of sight into the ice castle made it difficult for providers, care providers, to see their children at times. And so we're looking at, you know, design changes in that ice castle that would open up the lines of sight a little bit better. And so the caregivers could have, you know, can be in better touch with their children while they're out there.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks so much for working on this and for coming in and letting us know about it. Anything else that people need to know about this project as it's progressing, or ways that people might have opportunity to be able to comment, those kinds of things?
Well, if people want to hear and learn more, they're more than welcome to come and join us this weekend at 3:30 at UAS Glacier View Room on Sunday, and then on Monday at Centennial Hall, Ballroom 1, 6 p.m. And those will be the same content. We just wanted to give folks a couple of different opportunities to come out, meet the design team, and learn more about where we are in the process.
Well, that's great. Are there some preliminary visuals, anything like that? Those kinds of things people will be able to look at? Yeah.
And those are family-friendly events.
Okay, great.
Yeah, there'll be some great visuals there. Get to meet some committee members, the designers, talk about these updates face-to-face and in-person. And, you know, there's continued opportunities for fundraising, buying a fence picket or a shirt or a hat or a sticker, because every little bit helps as we try to assume to get to our target goals.
Yeah, and it just feels like everyone in the community is behind this and just wants the best playground for our kids and for our families.
And we want to do the best for them as well.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, Mike Goldstein and Alexandra Pierce, letting us know about Project Playground. Again, at UAS at 3:30 on Sunday is a time, and you'll be able to discuss this with these folks and with designers, and also Monday, 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Both events are family-friendly, so come on by and let them know your thoughts about Project Playground. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
Art Glasses, the not your typical wine and paint night, proudly presents Paper Garden with local artist Lorelei Miko on Thursday, December 14th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Rockwell. Prepare to use paper as both a creative and flexible material and leave with a mini mason jar bouquet. All supplies included, no host bar. Tickets on sale now at KTOO, The Jack, and JAHC.org.
It might seem like the news just will not stop. And through it all, you have relied on this station to keep up.
This confrontation and the many before it are over construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Much of the Southwest has been cooking in extreme heat.
Venezuela's opposition party has called for a 48-hour general strike.
You've relied on us, Now we're relying on you to become a new member today.
Sign on at ktoo.org or at 586-3636.
Fundraising time of year. Remember to call in your support for KTOO and all the stations here, KXLL and KRNN as well, at 586-3636. And you can also go online at ktoo.org. A couple of events happening tonight. Naughty or Nice wine tasting happening over at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. It's going to be starting at 5:30 tonight, and that's a benefit for the JAHC. Specialty Imports brings over delicious wines. And it's $20 a person. Head on over to Naughty or Nice if you're interested in finding out and learning about wines and having a great time supporting the arts. Also happening over at the Rockwell tonight, Rogue Elements, Alaska Powder Descents, is presenting that awesome film. And also Eagle Crest, Excellent Radio, and the Alaskan Brewing Company all pitching in to bring that film to the ballroom. Got two shows tonight. One's at 6 o'clock and one's at 8:30. The 8:30 one's 21 and over only, and it's $15 at the door. Great giveaways and all that stuff happening while you watch amazing skiing happening with Teton Gravity Research's Rogue Elements. Just a couple minutes. We're going to be talking about some of the events coming up at the Canvas. Also, once again, the stuff we've already been talking about today, we've got the opportunity to volunteer for the ORCA program if you want to get in on the training for that up at Eagle Crest. That's starting this December 16th and 17th is the days of the training. You can contact SAIL for more information on that. And the Story Factory, the Sunday Storytelling Workshop, is going to be happening with Pat McClear, Tom Cosgrove. That's at the Northern Lights Church at 3 p.m. on Saturday. Also coming up, on Sunday. Also coming up, two opportunities to get informed about Project Playground and all the activities that have been happening as that is looking to be rebuilt. You can see some of the preliminary discussions of visuals and design ideas. The designers are just hired, and they're going to be presenting that 3:30 at UAS on Sunday, and then Monday at 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Coming up, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the stuff coming up at the Canvas, but let's hear an oldie but goodie from King Harvest. Thank you. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And with me now to talk about all the stuff happening over at the Canvas is Mercedes Munoz. Mercedes, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you've got some holiday stuff coming up, right? So let's tell us a little bit about that.
We recently just finished a few fun holiday workshops. The last one we had was holiday printmaking with Jim Heumann. But if you missed out on that really fun class, we have more. One starting tomorrow, we're doing a open all day 10 to 4 gingerbread house decorating. And that's kind of an annual tradition of ours, and we have a ridiculous amount of candy, and we make all the frosting there for you. So it's a fun opportunity to come in with your family and decorate one house together, or each decorate your own. The price is per house. So.
Okay, so you come in, you get the beams, the 2x4s, right?
Yeah, we have all the pieces.
Graham cracker structure, right?
Yeah.
And you go from there, yeah.
Yeah, and we have someone there someone's going to be making all the frosting and, tons of candy to choose from. We have, like, the larger bases made, so it'll be really fun.
Yeah.
And, it's $35 per person if you're interested in that, and it's, again, going to be tomorrow, Saturday the 16th. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so feel free to stop by anytime. If you're not already signed up, that's okay. We generally get a lot of drop-ins
for
that.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And so holidays are a fun time at the Canvas, huh?
I mean, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, you know, trying to build up. Now, do you take a break from some of the normal classes that are happening at the Canvas during that time, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we kind of taper off our month-long or two-week workshops in November and start them back up again slowly in January, because we know people don't want to do too much in January recovering
right.
from the holidays. But we'll offer a few workshops coming in January too. Few of those are, you know, just the beginning wheel throwing. Those are always fun. We're going to do a new class, a cookbook illustration, and that's going to be like creating your own cookbook and doing a little bit of collage and drawing. It's a new class. We haven't done anything like that before, but
yeah.
That'll be in January, around starting on the 20th.
Now, what does that mean, do your own cookbook? Like, you're going to do the foods and photograph them and do the recipes, or is that?
So it's going to be a little bit of free form. You know, we're going to have the materials there to actually construct your own cookbook.
Okay.
And then students will be encouraged to bring in some of their favorite recipes, and we'll have some still life different fruits and vegetables to draw from.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So the idea would be that you would kind of create that foundation to put your favorite recipes in that cookbook, and that could be paired with some of the drawings that you're doing and the collages that are created during that
Maybe
class.
Some of the best stuff you got over the holidays.
Yeah.
Then you make that into a cookbook.
Yeah.
All right, there you
I
go.
Know that, you know, our family, we have lots of recipes, and I'm sure everybody has this too, but you always say, like, oh, I need to have my dad teach me that recipe, and my mom teach you this recipe. So it's a fun, definitely will be a fun way to be able to create a meaningful gift out of it.
Yeah, those. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah.
But then before that time, we have one more, or aside from the gingerbread house making that will be tomorrow, we're going to have one more workshop the following. Oh, I got that date wrong. I'm sorry. I said December 16th for the gingerbread house decorating. It is tomorrow, December 9th.
December 9th.
Yes.
Okay, so gingerbread, if you're into the gingerbread,
it's tomorrow.
Okay.
December 9th.
And what time?
10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
10 to 4. And you can just kind of drop by any time between 10 and 4? Okay,
yep.
Great.
We'll be there and ready
You'll have
for
all
you.
The stuff. Okay,
we
great.
We will have all the candy you can imagine.
Oh, yes. Lots of gumballs, I'm
yes.
guessing. A lot of those things.
And,
okay.
So the following weekend, then, December 16th, we'll have a silk painting class with a local artist, David Riccio. And he's taught many classes at the Canvas in the past, and they've all been a huge hit, and people love his teaching style and love the products they've created. It's really, you know, fun to be able to create art that you can use.
Yeah. Silk painting. So does that mean, what does that exactly mean? That's like the canvas, or does that mean you're going to paint on silk that becomes a scarf?
Sure.
Or?
Yeah. So we actually buy like the pre-made high quality silk pieces that are in the shape of a scarf. So they're like 8x54 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all the dyes there to dye them. And so there's different techniques that David does with some salt to do some resists and other things. I mean, I haven't done silk painting before,
though,
but
yeah.
I've seen him do it, and it's really cool.
Right.
And I've seen some of the pieces he's created, and they're really beautiful.
Well, I know his artwork, he works a lot in the digital realm,
right.
But he does like Kaczynski-inspired artwork a lot,
yeah.
You know? So it's this kind of it's not exactly abstract expression, but it's sort of like, yes, exactly, there it is, I see
it. I just held up a photo.
Yes, yes, right. So, but I can see it translating to scarf or silk work so
yeah.
well, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, just like a salt resistance to it, okay, that would create a little bit
some
of a
cool,
yeah,
effect.
Cool
yeah.
effect and all
and
that kind
got
of thing.
And we got some really beautiful dyes that we just got in, and yeah, we got these great scarf. So this is something in particular that would be just like a great Christmas present.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something to do, a gift, it'll be $60, and that will include two scarves and all the materials.
Oh,
so
that's
you'll
great.
Be able to make two beautiful handmade scarves and take them away with you that day.
That's great. And what time is that happening? That's on the 16th, and that's
yes,
what time?
And that's going to be 10 to 4 as well.
Okay.
And that one isn't a drop-in. That one will be, you know, aside from a short break for lunch, that will be 10 to 4 because
okay.
there'll be a lot more, obviously, instruction with that than the gingerbread making.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Gingerbread making, it's kind of, you kind of get it ahead of time, right? You know what to do. All right, well, that sounds great. Two great holiday classes happening at the Canvas. It's gingerbread making, that's tomorrow from 10 to 4, and that you can just drop in any time, and it's just however many houses you want, that's how many you pay for. And then on December 16th from 10 to 4, it's Silk Painting with David Riccio.
Mm-hmm.
And Mercedes Munoz, thanks for coming in. Let us know what's happening at the Canvas.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a great holiday.
You too.
Okay. Well, that's it for Juno Afternoon today. Thanks to Jeff for covering for me there at the top of the show. I really appreciate it and all that he does here at KTOO and for Juno Afternoon as the producer and mentor for so many people here. Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate it. Thanks to our folks who came in today from the Orca program, also to the Sunday Story Factory folks and Project Playground. Also, thanks to Mercedes Munoz from the Canvas for letting us know all the stuff that's happening there. Have a great weekend, everyone. It's kind of just weird weather here this week. We got some highs in the highs in the 50s even, lows in the mid-40s happening through this weekend. So stay dry as it's going to be rainy out and a little bit windy as well. And you won't have to worry about staying too warm. It's not going to get too cold this weekend. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks so much for listening in.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220...